The opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about the show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Good day. I am Katrina Kirkby, and I am your UC Master Gardener host today. And welcome to In the Garden with Master Gardener. My pleasure today is to have Helen Wood here, and we're going to be doing a wonderful show, and it's one of my favorite topics. It's about butterflies. And Helen is a fellow Master Gardener here in Orange County, and Helen's going to tell us everything, or almost everything, we want to know about starting a butterfly garden, what a butterfly garden is, how to keep it, how to nurture our butterflies, and just how to get going on butterfly gardens. Good day, Helen.
Hi.
You know, Helen, there's just so much about butterfly gardens. Could you tell us a little bit about why is it so important right now to have butterflies in our garden?
Well, because of urban sprawl, that's all of the new building and all of the cement and the lack of flowers in the cities and our areas. And because of pesticides, we're losing a lot of our wonderful butterflies. They're not around like when I was a little kid.
You know, I heard, Helen, that butterflies used to migrate from great distances away. Is that true?
There are some butterflies that migrate. The monarch is the best known. But there are others that migrate at certain times of the year or in groups, like the Painted Lady. And then there are some that just migrate by bits here and there. So it all depends on the area you live in. It depends on the time of year, and it depends on the type of butterfly and the temperature during that time of year.
I think a lot of people have heard about monarchs. Could you tell us a little bit about what's happening and how we're losing the population of monarchs and why it's so important and how they used to migrate? And, you know, I understand that sometimes they came from Canada and they've come through the Midwest down to Mexico, and we've had a colony here in California that has migrated also, and we're not having, because of urban sprawl, because of farming habitats and types of farming, they're not coming and they don't have the places to have their babies, so that we're losing the migration and the amounts that we have. Is that correct?
Yes, the ones we hear the most about are those coming from Canada and back east and places where they come miles and miles and miles all the way from there and then go to Mexico. Yet the ones in California don't go to Mexico. They go up the coast, Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and certain butterfly way stations along the way. And again, because people poison the curbs by the freeways, farmers poison where they don't want voracious bugs eating. Well, when they poison for bugs, a caterpillar is an insect too, so it's going to end up dying. And in the old days, there were fields and fields of milkweed, but there aren't anymore. So where caterpillars could graze as they flew, they can't do that anymore. Not like they used to. So some people think it's very important for gardeners to offer the food for those butterflies plus all the other butterflies.
And, you know, I find it personally as being something that's just so attractive in the yard, to watch them flitter in the yard, and it's very entertaining.
Well, I think manicured yards are great for people that need that. But to me, without a garden without butterflies, dragonflies, lizards, and birds doesn't have the life that a flittering, flying, glittering habitat has.
So you might have a beautiful garden, but when you have butterflies and dragonflies and all these other things in your garden, it just becomes alive, and that's how I feel. It's just alive and vibrant and entertaining.
Yes, like when we were walking out in my yard about an hour ago, you saw yellow sulfurs, you saw orange monarchs, the coppery fluttering gopher tularies, the shuttle type butterflies of the ones that I can't think of the name of right now, the skippers hopping and jumping all over in the lower levels. You could have seen blues if we were lucky, but we didn't see any today. But the flowers were bubbling with life.
I was just incredible. It was hard to look you almost in the face because I was so distracted by all the beautiful things and your vibrant yard, and you know, it was just so alive. My eye went from one thing to another to another. I think a lot of people think that it's hard to do a butterfly garden, and a lot of our listeners here have never done a butterfly garden. So this is a first-time talk for a lot of people, and this is also a refresher for a lot of people about, well, if I want a butterfly garden, is it a big commitment? Am I skillful enough? Is it hard to do? How much time does it take? I mean, I'm just throwing a whole bunch of questions at you, so you could just pick any subject we want. We've got plenty of time to talk about them all. But I think maybe if we talk about the first-time gardener, we mentioned why we might want it, because it just adds dimension and conversation. And it's probably very good for our environment, too, bringing in local natives, because it probably won't only bring butterflies in when we do a butterfly garden, but we'll get a host of other types of critters in our garden, too.
Right. Natives and non-native plants are very important for butterflies. Butterflies, they're caterpillars. When they lay eggs on specific plants called larval or host plants. Larval's just a fancy name for a caterpillar. So you have to have caterpillar plants, because when a butterfly uses their feet to check out a plant and says, oh, this tastes like what I need to lay my egg on, and they lay their egg, that plant becomes the nursery, because the butterfly just flies off. So the plant is going to try kind of shelter the egg. It's going to be the food for the caterpillar when it hatches. And caterpillars, their only job in life is to eat and eat and eat, eat and poop, eat and poop. That's all they do. They have voracious appetites. And then when they become a chrysalis, a moth becomes a cocoon, a butterfly becomes a chrysalis or a pupa. But we'll just refer to it as chrysalis. When it becomes this shape and transforms into a chrysalis, it needs somewhere to hang. So any old plant or many walls or edges of pools or fences will do. But in order to get to that stage, they had to have the plant so the caterpillar could eat and eat and eat.
Now, I understand that one of the most common plants is something called a milkweed. And when I first heard of milkweed, and there was a master gardener by the name of Kay Havens told me about milkweed, I said, I have enough weed in my garden. I don't want any more weeds. Could you tell us a little bit about milkweed, and it might not necessarily look like a weed, and what it does for the plant, for the caterpillars, and for the butterflies?
Okay, there's lots of variety of milkweed or asclepias. And in California, we are so lucky, we can use lots of different milkweeds. Because the caterpillar eats them, we want to kind of hide them or space them in between other flowering plants or bushy plants, because once they're eaten, which is the job of these plants if we put them in our garden, they don't look too pretty.
But, you know, they are beautiful. They're beautiful in my yard right now. They are beautiful. When I think about weed, I don't think about this plant. It is a pretty plant.
Right. Milkweed, the yellows, the whites, the pinks, the oranges, the red and oranges. It's beautiful, vibrant colors. And I have flowers throughout the year. And it's really great that I have flowers throughout the year, because this is such a versatile plant. It's not only food for caterpillars, it's nectar plants for many butterflies. So it's a twofer. Buy one, get another plant free. And it's not just, the nectar plant isn't just for monarchs. Gophritillaries go there. I've seen lots and lots of butterflies nectaring on milkweed. And it's not just the caterpillar for the monarch. There's this gorgeous butterfly called the queen that is a little bit more burnt umber orange color. It still has the black spots on it. It has the white spots on its black body. but it's a little bit longer than a monarch, and it flies, it seems to me, a little bit slower, and it's easier for me to get the picture when I take a photograph. So it's the caterpillar food for two butterflies, but it's a nectar plant for many.
Could you tell our listeners what nectar means?
Okay, think of nectar in the Greeks and everything. It's wine for the gods, or when we go to a cocktail party, it's for the grown-ups. Well, nectar is for the grown-up, which would be the butterfly. Butterflies get some moisture for it. They get some nutrients. And the neat thing about nectar plants is if the butterfly isn't using it, maybe the hummingbird is. Or maybe the bee. And we need all that in our habitat, and we want all that in our environment.
Exactly. And when you say host plant, what does that mean?
A host plant is the one that's going to be in charge of taking care of the baby. The butterfly is going to lay the egg on the host plant, and that's going to be the food for the caterpillar.
Now, one of my understandings, and tell me if I'm correct or not, is a host plant, when you say it's a host plant, it's the, like a plant that they have their babies on.
Right. The eggs hatch, the babies come out, and immediately start eating and eating and eating. And the neat thing about it is people come to my house and say, oh my goodness, you have so many caterpillars. Don't they eat all your flowers? They're very plant specific. A monarch caterpillar is only going to eat my milkweed. And I buy it, so they eat it. The Gulf fritillary is only going to eat certain ones of the passion flowers I have in my backyard. The white passion flower I have over there on one of the arches is just for my Gulf fritillaries. But the red one I have over on my gazebo, that is only for my hummingbirds. So they're not going to hurt the hummingbird food, and the hummingbirds aren't going to hurt my caterpillar food.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So what would you recommend? If I wanted to start a butterfly garden, is it hard to start it? Is there a lot of research to be done? If I just wanted to go do it, could you tell me if I was a first-time person who said, I'd love to have some butterflies in my yard, where do I start? What do I do?
First thing I would do would say, walk around your neighborhood. Take your phone or your camera and take pictures of any butterflies you might see in your area. Because those are the butterflies you're going to try to feed first. Now, there are some sure winners. If you have Passiflora corellia, also known as blue crown, or any of those type of passion flowers that Gulf fritillaries lay their eggs on, well, you're going to get Gulf fritillaries in your yard. And I know before I did monarchs, every time I saw an orange butterfly, I said, there's a monarch, there's a monarch. No, it was a Gulf fritillary because I had passion flower.
And, you know, a lot of times we have these things in our yard, we just don't know what they are. And I want to give everybody our hotline address because we're going to be talking about a lot of things today, and some of it makes a lot of sense, and some of it might say, Katrina, what are you talking about? Helen, what are you talking about? I don't understand. But we have a group of master gardeners that love to answer questions. And if they don't know the answer, they look it up, and that's something that's their way of giving back. And so let me give you our website address, and let me give you our hotline address. Our website is www.uccemg.com, and our hotline is hotline, which is hotline at uccemg.com. And that hotline address is, if you have questions, you could just write any questions. It doesn't matter what kind of question it is on butterflies and how to do it. What we would ask you to do is if you could send a picture, if you're asking a question about something, is this a caterpillar? Is this a butterfly caterpillar? Or is this something bad and you're not sure? Send a picture of the plant and send a picture of the caterpillar. And you could just attach it, and those people will write you, email you back fairly quickly. And this is what they love to do, and this is their way of giving back. and they can answer any other questions you have about gardening also. Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to be telling everybody about our hotline number and our website throughout this whole conversation because there's too much for us to cover today. And it's, you know, we are on the radio, and it's hard to describe, and we can't show you pictures. So that is another way we, to communicate and to answer questions. Okay, let's go back to what we were talking about. We were talking about butterflies and how to get them in our garden.
Okay, beginning butterfly flowers and what to put in your garden. First, you have to think, do I have little kids? Are they going to be picking and pulling flowers when I'm not around?
And why are we asking that question, Helen?
Because then you don't want milkweed. Because when someone breaks off milkweed, there's a milky substance there. And the butterflies eat that flower and get that, and then they don't taste good to birds, so birds won't eat them, and they're safe. Their orange color means, don't eat me, you won't like it. But if a child would touch that white stuff, or an adult, and put it in their eyes, they may end up going to emergency for first aid.
Okay, so it can be dangerous, so be very careful, along with all other plants. If you have any questions about other plants, if they're dangerous in your yard, you know, use our hotline again. I'm going to keep telling you that, but it's a great thing. But that milkweed, it's a beautiful plant. It's very attractive, and it is wonderful in the garden. I have it in my garden, but I don't have any little ones there. And I don't have any young pets that will start chewing on my plants either.
Right, and, you know, I have up to 100 or more plants at one time throughout the year. It just depends. It's seasonal. Sometimes I have less, sometimes I have more, and I have lots of little visitors because all my neighbors bring their grandkids over to see the butterfly garden and the turtles and the frogs and the lizards and everything, and I've never had anyone get hurt, but we're always supervising kids in the backyard.
Same thing here. We always supervise, and It's a wise thing to do on any occasion, but we just wanted to let you know about certain plants, especially the milkweed. So we're starting our garden. We're looking at you having us walk the neighborhood and see the plants that maybe butterflies are landing on.
Right.
Maybe take pictures of those.
Take a picture and send it to the hotline or go to the library and say, has anyone given butterfly talks? Where's my local butterfly gardener? Who is that? That's what people do, and that's how they get in contact with me. They said, I went to the library, and they said I should talk to you. So if I were to walk around my yard, I would see yellow butterflies, and these are called sulfurs. And that's because Jeff, my neighbor across the street, has Cassia or Senna. And I have 4 Cassias. And the butterflies lay their eggs on this. And you just have butterflies all year long. Beautiful yellow, or yellow with an orange blush, or yellow with a green blush, or pale yellow with a white blush, depending if they're male or female, or which sulfur there are. And you've got yellow caterpillars with black spots, green caterpillars with turquoise lines, green caterpillars, yellow caterpillars, all kinds on this plant. They never eat the whole plant, but they're always there. So you always have them in your yard. So that's a good thing to look for. And if your neighbor doesn't have it, if you buy that plant, they will probably come. The same with gulf fritillaries. They're beautiful orange, and when they close their wings, it looks kind of coppery in their veins, or gold or silver, depending how the light hits them or how old they are. And passion flower will get you that.
Just sounds wonderful. Just wonderful. Is there a season for butterflies?
Yes, in California, monarchs, for me, travel and make their journey mostly towards the wintertime. Like right now, a lot of people don't have as many monarchs, if any. I still have monarchs, but only my year-round monarchs. I have gulf fritillaries year-round, but not all people do. It depends how long you've had your passion flower vines, how many passion flower vines you have. I have my sulfurs year-round. Blues come in seasons. The little teeny blue butterflies and the Ackman blues and another little teeny butterfly that's about 3/4 of an inch called, or they're kind of gray, hair streaks. I get them around now. And that's if I have buckwheat or some of the non-natives or deerweed. And if I have nice nectar plants like verbena or lantana or sunflowers or tithonia, the Mexican sunflower that's orange. And right now I'm getting a lot of swallowtails. Now there's the giant swallowtail. And there's the anise swallowtail. There's the western swallowtail. And it depends on if you have citrus or your neighbors have citrus. And this is California, so you're going to get some swallowtails. If you live in San Clemente or Mission Viejo and you have wild anise in parking lots or in empty fields, or if you have fennel in your garden, you're going to get anise swallowtails. And if your neighbors have them, if you have willow in April, May, and June, you might get a lot of mourning cloaks. Or if you have Chinese elm or some other trees that the caterpillars might be making their little nests in. If the butterfly lays their eggs in there, because that's their larval tree, you're going to get mourning cloaks. And it's really wonderful because some butterflies are really bossy. A mourning cloak might chase you just like a hummingbird to tell you to get out of their area. And then you'll see a monarch chasing a gold fritillary to say, hey, get out of my territory. The next thing you know, you'll see a gold fritillary chasing a monarch to say, hey, this is my area. And it's just wonderful to watch.
It can be quite entertaining.
Very.
Yeah, I know when I have people over at our house and they're talking to me and all of a sudden they're not looking at me, and I know they're watching the butterflies because it catches their attention. It is just so much fun to have, and it's really not that hard to do. You plant it. It's not something that you have to really take care of every day.
Right.
So how difficult is it to have a butterfly garden? Do you have to have any expertise in butterfly gardens?
Not for the basic butterfly garden, especially like if you have children and you want butterflies down where they can see them, plant nasturtium. Plant a garden that has cabbage in it, and you'll get the white butterfly. And if you have mustard because you don't weed your yard often and you're near a field or a park, you're going to get the checkered white. And they like to stay kind of low. And a kid can see them just looking around or looking down. And the caterpillar's a little green guy that's not scary at all. The gold fritillary, if you have passion flower, you're going to see this black caterpillar with little spines coming out. And it's got this, like a ceramic orange bright line going up and down different parts of its body. And kids love to look at that.
You know, kids love to, I've seen them plant it. And then you plant the plant with the child, and they get to watch the butterfly comes, and they take ownership of that. And it's a beautiful way to start your children out for a love of garden, because you see an immediate effect. And it doesn't take that much time for a lot of these things. And you can say, honey, you planted this, and look what's coming. You made home for a butterfly. And that's really cool. Kids really get into that.
Right, and if you live up on a hill like I do, we have slopes. The lady across the street has lots of grandkids, little kids. So I just said, hey, throw the milkweed on your slope. And then it'll bloom. Your kids can't get to it, but the butterflies will come up and nectar on your other flowers, and you'll have the milkweed down there. So it's a safe place for kids. They can see the monarchs, but they don't have to touch the milkweed.
Sounds wonderful. We could also go to our website again, so don't forget about our website, which is www.ucccmg.com. Now you can look up questions about butterflies on there. If you have a particular question, you can go to our hotline, which is hotline@ucccmg.com. You can ask any questions about butterflies. You could ask about growing plants for butterflies. You could ask about watering and treatment of butterflies. And if you have any other questions about gardening in general, go to that site because they would be glad to help you out on that.
I forgot. There is one butterfly they use in schools a lot, the Painted Lady.
Oh, tell me about the Painted Lady.
The host plant is mallows, and one of the common mallows is hollyhocks. You can buy them in a six-pack at your favorite nursery.
Oh, and they're beautiful.
Yes. And so if you have mallows or thistles or nettle, or if you say, hey, I want a native garden, you can have lupin and you can have native mallows. And that way you're going to have the food for the caterpillars for the Painted Lady. And they're going to stop at your house more than likely. Everyone in my area has Painted Ladies if they plant for them. The nectar plants can be sunflower. Guy, everybody can just, the birds will plant sunflowers for you. And then, of course, if you're at a native garden, you can have buckwheat or coyote mint, which I find very easy to grow.
Oh, let me ask you a question. We're in the middle of a drought right now, and we're all being very conscious of what we're planting and our water use. Are very many of the plants water tolerant or drought tolerant?
All the plants I've talked about are in my garden right now, and we water twice a week. We use the sprayers that are on a black line that go throughout my yard. We don't use the big, powerful pop-ups. And like I said, we only water twice a year, and we meet all our water requirements.
You mean twice a week?
Twice a week, yes, not twice a year.
Wouldn't that be nice? And wouldn't it be nice only to water twice
yes,
a year?
Yes, and in some places, I have it set up so it waters, the stations are set up so it waters according to the type of plant I have. So where I have the buckwheat and where I have the mallows, it may only water once a week.
Right, and a lot of us are now doing drip systems. So because
right.
These plants don't need it, and even in other plants that are not water tolerable, we still can do the drip system, control amount of water. So you can have a beautiful yard. And actually, with this drought going on, it's really nice because these plants are beautiful. And they're very water tolerant, most of them, and they don't take a lot, and they're pretty plants. So if you're thinking about taking out some plants in your yard, you might consider putting in some host plants or some other plants that would be attracting butterflies or other birds or other critters into our yard that don't take a lot of water. So
right.
When we're doing our planning, we could possibly, you know, I would suggest everybody doing a list. You know, what do I want to do with my yard right now? And then what do I want to put in it? And what do I want to get out of it? Because, you know, a lot of people think, I'm giving up my grass, I'm not going to be able to have nice things. And we're associating grass with being really nice. But if we do give up some of our grass, we now could change and turn our yard and make it alive with other critters. And we could actually be helping our environment and saving water at the same time.
Oh, I agree. I don't have any grass. And I do have a lot of people that are envious of my yard.
Oh, you have a spectacular yard. Oh, my goodness. I wish I could post a picture of that one because your yard is just so alive and your water usage is so low and you have, it's just beautiful. It's stunning. So I would recommend everybody just, you know, if you're thinking about it, just maybe Google it or look up stuff on our website about drought tolerant and about native plants and about butterfly, what could be attractors to butterflies or host plants to butterflies.
Right, and before you do anything, make a list of the flowers that are in your yard and say, hey, what do I have so I don't have to spend money on duplicating something I have? Do I have any of those foods for the caterpillar? Do I have any nectar plants for the butterfly? If you have lantana, drought tolerant, well, so many butterflies like to nectar on that. If you have alstroemeria because you like flowers, tall, medium, and dwarfs, well, that's a very California-friendly plant, and it is a great nectar plant. Any butterfly pavilions I've ever been to have had alstroemeria, and they are California-friendly. If you're saying, oh, man, I'm going to make this a really drought-tolerant, I've had buckwheat. Well, buckwheat works. It draws a lot of butterflies.
Wow, incredible. I just need to take a moment and let everybody know that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. And again, you're with Katrina Kirkaby and Helen Wood. We're talking about butterflies and how we could attract butterflies in our yard and all kinds of good stuff in making our possibly our yard more drought tolerant, possibly taking out some grass, or if you don't want to even take out grass, you could plant a plant here and there. You don't have to do your whole yard as a butterfly garden. And we could just put in something here or there and still attract them to our yard.
Right.
Or you can go all out like you did and just have, it's just a butterfly paradise in your yard.
Well, in Irvine at the Master Gardener's headquarters, we planted a butterfly garden. And there are so many butterflies there. And it's a very small garden. But we made sure we used butterfly plants that they would like for nectar, and butterfly plants that the caterpillars needed for the butterflies that were in that area.
Wonderful. Here's another question for you, Helen. Will they also attract other will they attract hummingbirds? Will they attract other types of critters in our yard?
Yes, and one of the neat things I read about hummingbirds, they like nectar that's a little bit different from the nectar that the butterflies like. So it's not like they're going to be in total competition. Of course, butterflies like the tubular flowers, but they'll go for anything. I mean, hummingbirds like the tubular flowers, but butterflies that have a long tongue or proboscis, they can go in some of those flowers too, and they share them. So when a flower first opens, the amount of nectar in it or the type of nectar is a little bit different the next day and the next day and the next day. And the butterflies and the hummingbirds just go to those plants, finding the ones that meet their needs. And I've never seen a hummingbird fighting with a butterfly.
Never. You know what else I like about that is when you have, I've always worried about having to fill up the plant, or fill up the containers,
the feeders.
And when you put it in your yard, it just is one less thing to do because it just grows and you don't have to do anything. And then you have them coming into your yard without having to deal with feeders. You know, we're all so busy out there and our lives are busy. Here, it's done.
Right. I consider myself a lazy hummingbird gardener. I have no feeders, but I have Salvia gregii. I have sage. I have lots of tubular flowers. I have Alstroemeria, which the butterflies and hummingbirds share. And that's the kind of garden I like. And another thing, good thing about butterfly gardens, you don't want to manicure them. You don't want to weed them to death. Because remember, after the egg and the caterpillar, then comes the chrysalis. And so the caterpillar walks around for up to 35 feet to find the perfect place that he or she thinks they should make their chrysalis.
Well, you know, you're now talking about something I wanted to go to. First we have a butterfly, and then what happens next? Could you take us through the lifespan of a butterfly and a caterpillar, and where it goes and how it actually develops and what's the process there?
Okay, butterfly flies into your yard and says, oh, wow, this is the food I need for my caterpillar. Put their feet on it and say, yep, it is. They lay their egg. If it's a monarch, usually it's under the leaf, but it could be on top of the leaf. Then, in a while, the egg hatches and the caterpillar immediately starts eating. The little caterpillar makes a little hole and eats around it. And then as it gets just bigger, it just starts mowing down those leaves. When it finishes with all the leaves, it'll mow down the flowers. From the flowers, it'll even go to the twigs. And then it'll go to the next plant, whatever's around it, as long as it's milkweed. Then when they get big enough and they say, oh, I think it's time to make my chrysalis, they crawl down. Usually, I've seen one chrysalis in a milkweed before, but usually they crawl down, they do their walkabout, and they find the perfect place under the eave of the lumber piece on my fence, or underneath by where my pool is, or in my lawn ornaments, or in my lawn chairs, and they make their chrysalis.
Now, mind you, I don't know about your garden, but my garden, my caterpillars are not really smart. They sometimes need a little help getting back to where their place of where they need to eat, and they do their chrysalis wherever they feel like it.
Okay, yes, sometimes my monarchs decide right where you step out of the screen door is the perfect place for their chrysalis. And that's very dangerous because there are a lot of spiders down there, and my big feet might just step right on them. Now, caterpillars attach by some silk. So I take my finger and I rub that silk till I can get the chrysalis off, and then I take some paper tape or some paint tape, and I tape that chrysalis over on a safe part of my yard, maybe by a rose or by a trellis, so that it can come out. The important thing is I want to make sure wherever I tape it, when the butterfly does emerge, that it has a place where it can stretch its wings and pump it out, get the fluid going, stay there until its wings are nice and full and dry, and then fly off and start its life as a butterfly.
Oh, how much fun. Now, question for you. They take different lengths of time for different types of, to make that complete cycle for different types of butterflies. Can you tell us a little bit from what to what? What do we expect?
On average, I'd say about 2 weeks as a caterpillar, and then 2 weeks as a chrysalis. And then butterflies, depending on the type, if it's a small blue, maybe just 3 weeks. If it's a morning cloak or a monarch, much longer. And if they migrate, or if they overwinter and like sleep for part of the winter, it could be 8 months.
Really? 8 months?
And same with the chrysalis. A swallowtail chrysalis might stay in the same place for 6 months. So if the swallowtail walked off and went on a piece of dead iris, if you were to pull that out because you wanted to weed and have the perfect garden, you'd be pulling out your chrysalis. So that is my main excuse that I don't really weed my garden.
And your garden looks spectacular. Helen, you know, one time I came across this caterpillar that was so ugly. It looked like it was like from Star Wars, from another planet. Now, could you tell us that, you know, caterpillars from different butterflies look incredibly different, and some of them are really attractive, and some of them don't look, I guess it's a matter of what you think is attractive or not, but I've seen some of them that are just like, oh my God, what is that?
Well, some caterpillars have evolved so they look scary. After all, there's a lot of predators, not people, but things out to get them. Birds like to eat them. Wasps like to lay their eggs in them. Spiders eat them. So over time, like take the swallowtail. It starts out and it looks like bird poop. Black, white, a little bit of brown, maybe a little bit of faded green or gray, but it hides. Now, butterflies usually shed their skin 4 times before the last time they shed it, and before the last time when they become a chrysalis. So each time they look a little bit different. A swallowtail may start looking like bird poop. Then it looks like bird poop with spots. Then it looks kind of stripish or like a pinto. And then it looks like this green and white thing. And some swallowtails even have circles on them. Because, hey, snakes, maybe they have circles. Just like some butterflies, like the buckeye, have eyes on them, big circles. Some moths have big eyes. Well, they're hoping maybe someone thinks they're a snake or an owl, and they stay away from them. Just like the monarch is orange to say, hey, I'm poison. Well, the gulf fritillary is not poison, but it's orange too. So different things over time has just evolved to help them stay alive.
Incredible. You know, one of the reasons why I asked you that is a friend of mine snipped one of these thinking it was an evil worm, ugly critter kind of thing. And here we go back again to our hotline. If you don't know what it is, you know, feel free to go to our hotline and ask that question. And what really helps out is if you take a picture of it, and no matter how ugly it is or how pretty it is, if you could take a picture of it and also take a picture of the plant it's on, from a little close up and then maybe a little farther away, and just attach that and go to our hotline at hotline@uccemg.com and send them that and say, heck, I don't know if this is good or if this is bad, but could you tell me what it is? And they'll be glad to answer it for you. And if it's something invasive or it's a bad critter, They'll be glad to tell you what to do and how to take care of it and how to treat the problem and still leave the plant as a host plant for your butterflies.
Right, because right now I can think of two caterpillars I don't want in my yard.
I don't want
lopers or loopers. They start out multicolored, beige, brown, gray type of thing, and they go up really high and make a U and then come down, and they eat everything. Rose leaves. They were on my cassia. Now, my cassia, I planted those cassia special for my sulfur caterpillars, and I don't want a looper eating them. So that is one that I have a habitat, and I have a frog. He loves worms and flies and things like that.
Helen, do you know what? There's this little bug that's kind of red and black, and it goes on, I've seen it on milkweed before, and they multiply like crazy. Do you know what that is?
Right, that's a milkweed bug. And if you have milkweed, you're going to have a milkweed bug. Just like if you have milkweed, you're going to have yellow aphids. You could put your thumb on a hose and squirt them off if you have too many, but they will be back. And you can't say, oh, they're only on milkweed, because if a rose is nearby, they may be that. One day I went by and took a picture of any plant I could find even one milkweed bug on.
Could you describe what it looks like to her?
It's orange and black. And if I had a picture
And it doesn't
front
look
me,
like a caterpillar.
It looks like a bug. It looks like a bug. But it's a brilliant black and...
Now, somebody told me it eats the milkweed also. Is that correct?
I've seen it in milkweed pods and eating the milkweed seeds.
So
every time I
really
gather it, they're
have?
There. They don't hurt anything and they don't hurt anybody.
But they kind of, they eat, what, if you don't have a lot of milkweed, you'd rather save it for your caterpillars than for these guys? Or do you just leave them alone?
I just leave them alone because when you have a habitat, it's like having a city and a lot of different creatures live there. And they all seem to work together in some way or another. And since I don't know which one works for that, if they're harmless, I let them go. Ladybugs, the juvenile ladybugs look scary. They look like these little black and orange alligators. But I would never want to harm them because they turn into ladybugs. Ladybugs eat the aphids.
Oh, and they're a good bug. Tell us about aphids, because if we're going to have milkweed, we're going to have aphids. What are aphids? What do they look like? What do we do about them?
Well, if you don't look at it through a microscope or a lens where you can really see them, they look like little yellow dots that are moving. And they're little creatures that they just live on the milkweed and they poop a lot. And then the ants come and they like their honeydew or their poop.
So do we like aphids or we don't like aphids?
I like aphids because that means I'm going to have ladybugs come. Because the ladybugs will eventually eat that. And they don't hurt my plants. Like I said, I can always take my thumb, put it on a hose, and hose off a lot of it. I don't use any pesticides in my yard. Because, sure, pesticides kill bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Butterflies are beautiful, but they're still an insect.
Mm-hmm.
They could still die. How are you going to say, hey, I'm going to spray this on the milkweed only... to kill the aphids. You can't. It would damage the eggs, kill the caterpillars, and then you lose your habitat. You lose the life in your garden. If it doesn't bother you, if it's not going to bite you, if it's not going to harm your garden terribly, let it go because they all work together. I haven't used pesticides at all in over like 14 years.
That's amazing.
And my garden balances out.
That is really amazing that you've been able to do that for so long. But that's you've created a balanced habitat, and that's what a lot of us strive to do. And once we do that, it's so much easier not to do it. Now, I believe the UC believes if we need to, we need to use a pesticide, but we could strive to have as much organic and balanced garden as we could possibly have.
Right, and if you're not sure, that's when you go to the hotline and you ask them.
Wonderful, wonderful. Let me ask you, what haven't we talked about yet? We have about 15 minutes left, and we can talk about some wonderful stuff.
We haven't talked about the butterflies I can't get. I think red admirals are gorgeous. And my friend 2 miles away from me, and another friend in the opposite direction, 1 mile, she gets Red Admirals. They both get Red Admirals, but I don't. Darn it. And I have everything it needs, stinging nettle, false nettle, pellitorium, baby tears. But the caterpillars just don't come to my area. And same with a California sister. They need oaks, and they need a different type of area, so I don't get those. Oh, and then the California dog face, this gorgeous butterfly. It looks all yellow when the wings are closed, and when they open it, it's like it's got this black poodle face on the inside of the wings. But you can only really see that one if you go to the park off of Ortega or somewhere down in San Diego.
You know, Helen, it's so funny because your yard is full of wildlife. And to think that you don't have something, it's just kind of funny for me because it's just, wow, you have everything except for a few. So you can have no matter where you are, you could have a vibrant garden. You might not have everything, but you could have so much.
Right, and it's okay to make mistakes. I made mistakes. I bought the false indigo so that I would get the California butterfly. And I bought all kinds of things that just didn't work. Because instead of looking around my neighborhood and asking local butterfly gardeners, I just went to these nurseries and they said, oh, well, this is the butterfly plant and it'll get you a butterfly. So I took it home. So I can't stress enough, you want to save money, check your local areas.
See what people are growing in the neighborhood.
Right. And then when you do go to buy milkweed and other plants, ask, hey, are there pesticides on this? And if they say they don't know, well, you can buy the plant, but for 3 weeks or more, keep it somewhere where there aren't going to be any butterflies and, you know, water it and make sure there's nothing. But even better than that, go to a nursery and say, I want to buy a plant that has no pesticides on it, because there are nurseries that sell those plants.
Right. And if the person you're talking to at the nursery hems and haws and doesn't quite know, talk to somebody that might be a little bit more knowledgeable.
Right. It's easy to say, well, let me talk to the manager or let me talk to the owner. Or, you know, if you don't know, then I have to go elsewhere. So next time I come, will you please know?
You know, we're going to try to post this on our website. So if you want to listen to this over again, you can go to our website and listen to this talk over again. And Helen has a wonderful list of plants that work in our area. And we're fortunate because this is a Southern California Orange County show, and that all we talk about is things that grow in this area. And we'll post your list along with our show. So if you want to go to our website, you can go see that and along with the list and see, here's some ideas and see what works for you. You know, some plants are small that attract butterflies and some plants are huge. So you have to look at what your yard is and maybe do a little bit of research, because if you have a really small yard, you don't want a plant that takes over the whole yard. Or if you have a really large yard, you could plant one of those big plants.
Yeah, and like right now, if you wanted nectar plants and you wanted cheap, you could buy a 6-pack of zinnias or zinnia seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could find someone that has a lot of tithonia that's just starting to grow in their yard and get some of their baby seedlings. Now that grows into a tall plant, but the zinnias, they vary in size from very, very small to medium height. And they are great nectar plants, along with lantana that is pretty inexpensive. So you could buy something like that to start your nectar garden, or you could go expensive and get something in a 5-gallon plant just because you want your landscape to look like this. So it all depends what you want.
Excellent. And we could also, somebody just mentioned to me that we can go to the Metropolitan Water District, bewaterwise.com, for drought-tolerant plants. So we can also compare drought-tolerant plants with plants that are host plants or plant attractors for butterflies, and compare the two and see what works well in our garden.
Right, and lantana will be on that list.
Oh, and lantana
is a great nectar plant, along with buckwheat.
Okay, I got to tell you about lantana. When I first started gardening, my lantana, and it's this beautiful little plant, I didn't know I needed to trim it back. And I ended up not liking the plant, and I took it out because it got really woody. So when we're looking at putting new plants in, read a little bit about it, because it's a beautiful plant, and I spent so much time taking it out after I had put it in, and now I wish I had it. So read a little bit about the plant, read a little bit about the characteristics of the plant, not only if it attracts butterflies or if it's drought tolerant, but just a little bit about what its characteristics are. That's a side note from being a master gardener.
Right.
Let's see. This has been really, really informative. Oh, my goodness. We have about, 10 minutes left or so. Is there anything that we haven't talked about yet? I think we've done a really pretty good job here. And
books. We haven't talked about books.
Yes.
Okay. If you don't want to garden until you do a lot of hiking or you really want to see a lot of the butterfly pictures instead of drawings, for butterfly pictures, you can go to Introduction to Southern California Butterflies by Fred Heath. It's got a great many pictures. Now, for caterpillars, right now, there's only one caterpillar book out right now, and that's Field Guide to Butterfly Caterpillars of North America by Jeffrey Glassberg. He also does Butterflies Through Binoculars of the West that gives you an idea. But if you want to do, say, hey, since I'm starting this, I want butterflies and hummingbirds, you might want the new Backyard Bird Guide Peterson Field Guide called Hummingbirds and Butterflies by Bill Thompson and Connie Tukes. And that's a twofer.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, there's a lot that you just gave us a lot of information. I mean, I'm looking at Helen's books right now, and they have tags all over them. There's a wealth of information. I'm sure you can go to your local library and look at butterflies and caterpillars.
And the internet for free.
And the internet.
There are several sites for that.
I mean, there's a lot. And, you know, be smart about it. You know, a lot of people are taking out their yards right now, and, you know, we're all looking at saving water, and we're looking at saving some money, and maybe just before you start taking things out, do a list and do a little bit of research about what do you really want in your yard, what do you want to attract in your yard, how much water you want to use. You know, this is a show about butterflies right now, but we're in the middle of a drought, and that's something that I think we're all very, very conscious of, and there's a lot of things that we can do that can make our garden beautiful. We just need to change a little bit of the way we're thinking. And it's just because we can't have a lawn, or our lawn won't look good, we could possibly have an incredibly gorgeous yard like yours, Helen, and not use a lot of water and attract a lot of beautiful birds and native birds here. And it's just absolutely loving. So there's a lot love. It's loving and lovely. And so there's a lot we can do. And Helen, I thank you so much for being with us today and giving us, you know, your wealth of knowledge. And I want to leave everybody with our website information again. I know I've given out a lot, but there's a lot of different, there's so much on there. And our hotline people will really try to help you out. They don't know everything, but they're really, really good. That's who I go to when I have questions. And our hotline is HOTLINE at UCCEMG.com. And our website is www.uccemg.com. I'm Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Helen Wood. We're both UC Master Gardeners, and I thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.